I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio. Well, it's Friday afternoon, which is the perfect time to take a trip, so I'm going to ask you to come along with us because this one is a doozy. If you think it takes forever to get to Tanglewood on the Mass Pike or forever to get through Connecticut on 84, you've got nothing on Voyager 1. The small spacecraft is about the size of your car, and it's been traveling a long time, 35 years and 10 days, and after covering roughly 11 billion miles, it's about to do something that no man-made object has ever done: break through the confines of our solar system into a place called the interstellar matter. Now, nobody's 100% sure when it's going to happen, but it's going to be soon. It could even be happening right now as we speak. So how are we going to know when we're there? Well, there's about a handful of people on the planet who can tell us that, and one of them is Boston University Assistant Professor of Astronomy, Mirav Ofer, who is with me in the studio right now. Mirav, thank you so much for joining us today on Boston Public Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is a pretty exciting thing, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
So Voyager 1 is one of two spacecraft. There was a Voyager 1 and a Voyager 2, both of which were launched in 1977. What are these spacecraft? What was the idea behind them initially?
So the idea was, at that time, NASA used to send two spacecraft in case one would fail. The other one was right behind. So they sent both of them, and the idea that they will go to the outer planets and, you know, take first-time measurements from Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune was one of the first time. And I don't remember the whole technology behind it, who was going to go where, but they mostly were going to go in the same direction.
Yeah.
And then by the time they got to Neptune, I think, they decided to take a dive. Voyager 2 was going to take a dive to map one of the satellites and of Neptune. And so they took Voyager 2, took a dive, and then went to the southern hemisphere.
Okay.
And by doing that, so I think when Voyager, the team, the original team, sold it to NASA, was like, hey, we're going to go to these outer planets, was one of a huge mission, a very large. Voyager is actually probably the size of two cars. It's big.
Okay. So if you got a big car, it's the size of your car.
Exactly. It's really big. It's humongous. When you see that, I was like, oh my God. It's a huge fridge. It's like one of these oldest fridges. It's really big. So anyway, so they sent that. And when they got there, so, you know, all the books, you know, as a kid, you looked how Saturn looked like, those Technicolor pictures, is all Voyager.
So the Voyagers were taking pictures
of everything.
Saturn.
Saturn, Uranus. They discovered that Uranus was tilted, that the axis of the magnetic field was tilted. Nobody knew that.
Yeah.
They discovered that Io had volcanoes on the surface. Nobody knew that there was a moon out there that had volcanoes.
Yeah.
So all the Voyager had first on everything.
Yeah.
And so it took pictures, measurements. The story was that Stone will, the PI will receive the scientists and the journalists, and we will go over the data all together in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And do these amazing discoveries. And then when they finished that, the team managed to convince NASA, I know there's nothing beyond that.
So this is, you've passed, like, you're
passed,
through. You're done.
Right.
You've gone
done.
Past Pluto.
Right. You're done. And then
nothing
what?
Left.
And then the idea was, you know, Voyager move 3 AU a year. So it's 17 kilometers an hour.
Okay.
So it's kind of going slow.
Yeah. It's and, not too fast.
Yeah. But the idea was, even with that speed, was going to take, you know, 10, 15 years of nothing. Taking measurement of the space beyond the planets,
yeah.
Still in the solar system, but yeah. Nothing really exciting. And so the idea was to convince NASA, hey, keep the antennas listening to Voyager, keep the team funded for 10 years.
For 10 years of nothing.
Of nothing, kind of nothing.
That's a tough sell.
Right, a kind of nothing. And let's transform it to an interstellar mission. They changed the name.
So they it had already completed what it initially set out to
right,
do, which was
right.
Take pictures of the planets, take measurements around the planets, and it was done. And normally it would be shut down, but you
right.
guys fought.
Right, exactly. And yeah. I think was a lot of, I think it's done on the PI, managing to navigate the system and saying, you know what, let's convince them that Voyager is still working. We had technology just until Saturn and Jupiter, but hey, it's still working. How about if we keep funding it for another 10 years?
So not only still working, but still communicating. And before we get to these years, it took one final picture that I do want to talk about, which was at the bequest of Carl Sagan, right?
Right, right.
So what was this? This was...
And again, you can think all these managers and scientists, a little bit of the dry types, but Carl Sagan was pushing that because they had all these big instruments and they had to start managing energy. Which instrument are we going to turn off so we can save energy and have Voyager, you know, have enough energy when it gets to the end of the solar system?
To still be able to do stuff, yeah.
And one of the first one was a camera. Because
10 years of nothing, what are you going to take pictures
of? Exactly. You're going to take the black pitch. No, nothing. So let's turn it off. And Carl Sagan managed, I think, I heard the story, he went down to NASA headquarters and told them, just turn the camera back. Turn to Earth, one final shot. And they did that. And this is a famous pale blue dot that you see the Earth, like it's almost like a speck.
And we should
say, we're
going to have a picture. We have a picture of that that image, the pale blue dot image, on our website at wgbhnews.org. So you can log on there and check it out. And it was taken on, what day did he take the photo?
I don't remember, actually.
It was a Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day
was when they took that picture,
which
is amazing, right?
Super cool, yeah.
Okay, so now 10 years of nothing, and then that's kind of where you step in, because now, after all this nothing, we've gotten to this place that is the edge of our solar system. We've never been there before. That's where we're at now. What's going on?
So when I stepped in, was just a couple of years before we crossed the first of the boundaries of this edge that is called termination shock. It's kind of like...
Termination shock sounds very serious.
Kind of very serious. And it's where I like to think it's almost like a waterfall, that the solar wind, the wind that come out from the sun, is very strong, and then it has to slow down as it's coming close to the edge. Mm. So it boom, and it does it in a shock, in a waterfall.
I see.
So there was a location in space when it's going from 400 kilometers... per second to boom, to 100. It goes through a shock.
Yeah.
And this is called termination shock. I came a couple of years before that when there was a big debate in the team. Are we crossing? Are we there yet? What's happening? And I realized how much the data is complicated.
I'm talking with Merav Ofer, who's an assistant professor of astronomy at BU. She's on the Voyager team. She's a scientist for the Voyager team. We're talking about the Voyager 1 at this point, which is at the very edge of our solar system. You talk about the data. How does it work? How do you communicate with this thing? And what is the data that you're receiving?
So it's like right now on Voyager 1, there is, I think, 4 instruments working. One of the instruments... Kaput, not working, but Voyager 2, that instrument is working.
Okay.
So there is a difference. But there is something called Deep Space Network, DSN antennas.
Okay.
Some of them located in Australia that listen. Those are the antennas that listen to all the spacecraft that NASA has out there.
Mm-hmm.
So they listen to Voyager twice a day at least.
For how long?
I don't know. They try to do as much as they can, but it's all come to sharing the, for example, Opportunity. The one that landed in Mars, you have to listen with the same dish. So there is all this fight. Okay, let's stop listening to Opportunity. Let's go listen to Voyager. So
So everybody's like sort of wrangling for time on this,
for
like
time
one
on
antenna.
That, right.
Wow.
A couple of antennas, but those are the ears of NASA to communicate. Voyager doesn't have a lot of energy. The idea is that Voyager, you can think, is energy of a light bulb. It's a very, very...
Wait, a light bulb.
Light bulb, like a single light bulb. Right.
That's how much energy it has.
Right.
And yet you're still able to communicate from 11 billion miles away back to Earth.
Right. And it's some technicality of that is how much data it can store on board and how much it has to... I have to say it before I forget. You know, I have to stream back the data. So you have to listen to me.
Yeah.
So they have this... game of how much time Voyager can store the data. It doesn't have a lot of memory. It's an old technology.
Yeah.
Before it's taking new data. So it has all this. But so you get the data. You get in cosmic rays, plasma, radio waves. You can measure the magnetic fields. You have this couple of instruments.
In fact, I have a little piece of sound of radio waves that it picks up. So I want everybody to listen to this and have a sense of what exactly this refrigerator that is 11 billion miles away at the edge of our solar system is hearing out there. Let's hear this.
It's pretty eerie.
It's so cool. What is it? What is that that we're hearing right there?
So this is a kind of an amazing thing. So the plasma team listen in this frequency 2 to 3 kilohertz.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine you have a radio station and you're all the time tuned.
Like 89.7, our radio
exactly,
station.
Exactly, yes. And you're all the time listening to that frequency.
Yeah.
Nothing comes. It's silence the whole time. You're bored like crazy. And then every 11 years, boom, these sounds come.
Every 11 years?
Exactly. Every 11 years, you hear this whoops. And you're like, okay, something's going to come up. And then silent. Again for another 11 years.
And what do we boom. Learn when we find out that every 11 years we hear this sound?
So I mean, they started, this is years ago, then they started plotting it and said, every 11 years I have this burst. What
yeah.
is it?
Yeah.
And they correlated it with activity on the sun. Mm. The sun has cycles. It's quiet and then has 11-year cycle.
Mm.
So it's kind of like it's become very quiet and then boom, it's, you know, agitated and eject a lot of magnetic energy and in blobs of material and then become quiet again.
Is blobs the technical term? Blobs of material?
No. It's called coronal mass ejections. But
blobs is better.
Blobs is
yeah,
better,
yeah,
right.
Blobs is better.
So it's ejects those blobs and they correlated it with these emissions into 2 to 3 kilohertz,
mm.
and realize those blobs was 1 year before, and take a year for any blob to reach the edge of the solar system.
Wow.
Now, again, nobody knows the size of the edge of the solar system.
So, yeah, right. And this is where we're at now. So this is where you come in. What's your job on the team exactly?
So I am not part of any instrument specifically. Those people have been working for the last 40 years, those instruments. I came with another 2 or 3 theoreticians and modelers to help interpret the data.
So
we have kind of titles, Voyager Guest Investigators.
Well, and we are, that's what your title is, Guest Investigator?
Yes.
That's a pretty cool title.
It's a cool title. So we are kind of, we sit in the Voyager team meetings, so we participate in conferences like any other scientist. But we have kind of, we look at the data when it's the first dibs, when it's coming in, and there is we participate in the debate, what is it? So like last week I was in Pasadena in the Voyager team meeting.
Okay.
And we were debating what's going on along Voyager 1. The data is really weird.
So what's weird about it right now?
So it's, we don't really know. It's, again, it's coming back to the debate before we cross the termination shock. It's like, we expect at this point that Voyager 1 is very close to leave the solar system.
So how are you going to know when it leaves? Like, what exactly is it leaving? Is it going to break through breaking through a glass ceiling or breaking through like a piece of skin or what is it going to leave?
So my best analogy is like you're leaving your backyard, kind
okay.
of.
Okay.
You have you have no idea how deep is your backyard.
All right.
So you're leaving the domain where the solar wind dominates.
Okay.
So what happened, we have something called the heliosphere that is a bubble that protects us from the rest of the galaxy.
Okay.
So particles can come in, but high-energy particles, low-energy are deflected. So
okay.
we have, it's almost like a shield.
So it's a shield around us from the sun. It's the sun's
the
sort
sun
of like
wind,
power.
Right. The sun waned, and as we travel, this sun wind gets turned back, and we create these bubbles like a comet
yeah.
shape.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we haven't been through any of that. This is a first of going through any stars that you look out there. You know every star has a shield
has
like
one
that.
Of these, yeah.
And we haven't been ever through any of those. This will be the first one.
Wow.
So we will be measuring, you know, in situ. You're like smelling, touching in situ one of these shields.
Yeah.
And we are not sure how the shields should look like. Is this really a shield? Or I have the theory with my colleagues that is a gauze. That is not really a shield.
It's gauze. So it's porous. So things can get
you know,
in and out.
Yeah, this is what I think that is a gauze and porous. But maybe it's not. So the data is showing that the high energy particles are starting to leak in much more. Does this mean it's porous that is really leaking in?
Yeah.
Or some way we are able to touch the interstellar medium and come back. So there is a whole debate. Right now we think we're still inside.
Yeah.
But we're really, really close. So we are not sure, did we stretch our arm? We touched the interstellar medium, we came back.
Yeah, yeah.
So we are at that position.
Do you anticipate that when we sort of quote-unquote break through into the interstellar medium, will the conditions be completely different? Is that what you expect, that you'll know it? It'll be like a lightning bolt and you'll see it and you'll be like in the data like, we are definitely there. Or is it going to be like a maybe thing? Or maybe are we already there? Does the data mean that we've already broken through?
So I think this is what's happening. And every time we have been like Uranus, the story of Uranus, the termination shock, you learn in textbook and you think it's going to be on and off. I'm off.
Yeah.
I'm in interstellar medium. But you get there, it's never like that.
Yeah.
You might be in this situation that, hey, maybe the shield is not really a shield, but it's a whole layer that you're intermixing between the interstellar medium and the solar wind. So we'll be in this limbo until we're completely out.
What is the point of all of it? Like, what are we going to learn by, you know, going through this layer and being in the interstellar medium? Like, on one level, it's like, to me, it's like, it's so cool, right? You're like, oh my gosh, we're going to be in the interstellar medium. We've never been there. That's exciting. But like, what will we learn? What's the point? What drives you to like do this?
Well, there's several levels. One is like in also one immediate level is, interstellar medium is the first time you're measuring winds from other stars. You know that the interstellar medium, the medium between stars,
mm-hmm.
is made of previous stars that lived, died, and exploded.
Yeah.
So all this material, we never touched it. We never been there.
Yeah.
So finally, we are access to a certain type of material, how the universe was born. All these kind of bigger questions are there. We haven't been there. So you can, you know, we sit here on Earth looking at these beautiful pictures from stars, but it's remote. You're taking pictures from far away.
Yeah.
It's different than being there, you know, in the Grand Canyon and right there, touching it and saying, it's much more sandy than I thought, you know?
Right.
So this is one. But the other one is Earth is protected by high-energy galactic cosmic rays, high-energy particles, by this shield. If we discover that this shield is much more porous than we thought before, then this means that the history of Earth was very different.
Mm.
And the history of what Earth will be very different. And I'm talking here, not being catastrophical,
right.
10,000 years. It's like big time. But still, you know that as the solar system move in the galaxy, it might encounter different media out there. And we want to know how well we are protected.
Yeah.
And so this is a little bit existential future question as well.
It's very interesting. I'm talking with Mirav Ofer, who is assistant professor of astronomy at BU, and she is one of the team scientists on the Voyager mission, which is at the outer edges of our solar system as we speak right now. Mirav, when you say you look at the data and you're analyzing it, what are you looking at? Or is it like are you looking at numbers? Are you looking at like a drawing? Like, how does it come in?
Let me give you an example. One of the things that came a couple of years ago that is steering the team is like exciting is we get, so some instruments send us the data pretty right away. You can go to the Voyager website on NASA and click on the cosmic ray data. And it says every 6 hours it's updating it and you can see it right there.
It's crazy.
But some data, you know, has to be cleaned out more and has to be massaged before you can really look. And like the MIT plasma instrument that measures the speed of the solar wind, they have to analyze and process it. But finally, when I get the product, so you look at the speed. So you see 400 kilometers, and now in this region, it should be going down to zero, 120 kilometers. So you get speed versus time, for example. And then you look at your models. It should be going 120, going down. But in the last couple of years, we enter in this region along Voyager 1 that we get this data that tells you that we are in a zero speed region. The solar wind was not supposed to stop before getting to this heliopause.
Yeah.
Why is doing that? So if this is going on for the last, I will say, 3 to 4 years, the solar wind stopped. Totally unexpected.
Wow.
So this kind of data, so I look at the data and I compare it with theories, modeling that I'm doing and saying, how can I explain something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty fascinating stuff. So once we're out there and we're into the interstellar matter, the way I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, the next sort of thing that could happen is about 40,000 years from now, it should approach another planetary system, right? So
yes.
So
oh, yeah.
But, no, but the interesting thing is that on each of these, the Voyager 1 and the Voyager 2, is a record. It's called the Golden Record, which was put together again by Carl Sagan and his wife.
Andoyen, yeah.
And so what's on these records? I mean, this is kind of neat.
This is, I don't know the whole story of that. I know I heard from Anne Doyen told me that piece, that they got the permission from NASA, I think was kind of last minute. You can put this message. We are going to launch these probes that we're going to go to places we haven't been before. And maybe some, you know, aliens will meet us, you know, down the line, even after we stop listening to Voyager.
Yeah.
And let's make the most durable thing we can. So they make this golden record that it was the most durable thing that they could come up, that record, but made in gold, really.
Yeah.
And they have etchings on the gold record explaining to a future alien how to play it, yeah, how the phonograph works, and who are we. And there is also like pictures of all the stars around us where we think we are. So we are, and inside that gold record, we have sounds and images. So what Doyen and Sagan did were to ask all the specialists that they knew at that time, give us samples of what other civilizations, humanity, will want to say to other civilizations. So they have everything from Ella Fitzgerald, Beethoven, pictures.
Sounds of like rainstorms, the ocean, a baby crying.
Baby was born, yeah.
And in fact, we have a little of this. They also have dozens of languages, people saying greetings in dozens of languages. Here's a little bit of that.
Namaskar. Bishe shanti ho.
Mai lagnya.
Got wai ho ma. Tuk got wai. Ping on. Gin hong. Pai lo.
Milí přátelé, přejeme vám vše nejlepší.
Hartelijke groeten aan iedereen. Bonjour tout le monde.
It's so cool.
I love it. Every time I listen, I get goosebumps.
Yeah, here's what Carl Sagan said about this. And before we go, I just want to kind of get your reaction to this statement of his. And he said, you know, the spacecraft will be encountered and the record played only if there are advanced spacefaring civilizations in interstellar space. But the launching of this bottle into the cosmic ocean says something very hopeful about life on this planet.
Yeah, I think this is what gives me this goosebump, that we were this, you know, you have this technology that you have this huge piece of fridge going to space, but you still go, you put your soul there. You know, as a civilization, I'm, you know, there is a hope that we're not just measuring all these objects that we think, that maybe something bigger, a civilization will find us. Yeah, it's incredible.
Merav Ofer, Assistant Professor of Astronomy at Boston University and Voyager Team Scientist. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having
me. Here on boring old planet Earth, as it seems right now.
Not at all. Thank you so much.
And a little less boring of a planet Earth, because Callie Crossley is back in the studio. How's it going, Callie?
Well, Edgar, we're going to zoom away from where you've just been to the Higgs-Boson level. I'm talking about hyperlocal news. It's Friday, which means we look at the local stories that went under the radar.
I like it. So you're talking about stories that would hyperlocal stories only picked up by a Hadron Collider.
You just wanted to say that, but you got it.
I'm Edgar B. Herwick III.
I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.